The following recording is from the previous cycle.
Today's daf is Bava Metzia daf Kuf Hey, and we're about 20 lines from the bottom, middle of the Amid, on daf Kuf Dalid Amid Bey. Zokta Gemara, Hu Gavra, more halachas regarding a Mekabel Sada Mechaveri, whether he's an Oris or a Chayker, as we will see. There was a person that was Mekabel Sada Mechaveri. He's a farmer. He's going to work his friend's field. Omar, he said, Imoy Varnola, to the extent that I do not do what I'm supposed to do, meaning I decide to be lazy and not work the field that I took from you, Yohivnalach Alpha Zuzi, I'm going to give you 1,000 Zuzim. He gave him a number that was a Guzma, meaning even if he would work, the field wouldn't produce Alpha Zuzi. But he said, as a penalty, to the extent that I don't do what I'm supposed to do, I'm willing to give you Alpha Zuzi. Oiver Tilsa, he ended up not doing or not working on 1/3 of the field, 2/3 of the field he worked. 1/3 he did it. Amri Nardoi. So in Nardoi, they paskin, Dina Hu Diyavla, Tlas Meyo, Vitalsan, Vitalsa, Vitalsa. He has to give him 1/3 of the $1,000 knas that he obligated himself. So he had said that to the extent that I'm not going to work in this field at all, I would give you 1,000 zuzim, that would be my knas. So if he now didn't work on 1/3, we take that number, multiply it by 1/3, and that's what his knas is going to be. Rav Amar, Rav said, Asmachta hiva, asmachta leikanya. This knas is dead on arrival. Because anytime a person obligates himself to do something, but it's a conditional obligation, he says that if X, Y, and Z happen, then I'm going to obligate myself to do something, such as a machzachik pekuvya. He places a wager on something. He says, if my team loses, I'm going to give you a certain amount of money. That's an asmachta. This too is an asmachta. If I don't work, then I'm going to give you a certain amount of money. An asmachta leikanya. And the svara behind asmachta leikanya is because in his mind, he did not think he wasn't going to work. He thought he was going to work, just like he thought that his team was going to win. And Rava holds asmachta leikanya. It's a machloikis throughout Shas. And for that reason, says Rava, if he wouldn't work at all, he wouldn't have to give 1,000 zuzin. And if he didn't work on 1/3 of the field, he doesn't have to give 1/3 of 1,000 either. Fake the Gemara, Ula Rava, according to Rava, very nice svara. But Mishnah li hadatanan, it would seem to contradict our Mishnah. The Mishnah said that the Oris writes in his shtar, Im oyver v'loy avid ashalim b'meitva, that if I'm not going to do my job, I'm not going to work the field, I'm going to make you whole. Not only will I make you whole, I'll pay you meitav. A mazik pays meitav, I'm going to pay you meitav. Remeya hayu dairish loshen hedit from this loshen that was written in the Shtore Arisus. But the bottom line is, it's a Mefurish Mishnah that the Oris says that if I don't work, I'll pay you. And we don't say that it's an Asmachta because in his mind he thought he was going to work. Says the Gemara, it's different. Hasam Leika Gaza. Hacha, over here, Kivan the Kamar Milsi Yesirta Gulzma Ba'almahu Dika Gaza. The difference is in the Mishnah he's saying that if I don't work, I'll pay you what you anyways were going to get. That obligation he has to make, he has to satisfy. And we don't look at that as an asmachta. In Rava's case, the number that he obligated himself to pay in the event that he didn't do his job was an exaggerated number. It was a number that the Baal HaSada would not lose. As a result, that mispar, that's a guzma, that's not related to the actual hefsid, it's stafka over there that you're going to have the halacha of asmachta lekanya. And there's a long discussion in the Rishonim, what's really the difference? At the end of the day, if it boils down to an asmachta, and that is the only reason the Oris is ever obligated to pay, if he doesn't work the field, then whether this number that he was mechayev himself is related somehow to a hefsid that the Baal HaSada is going to have, or it's not related to a hefsid that the Baal HaSada is going to have, should it really make a difference? It's a discussion. Rishonim, Rashi, Tosfos, other Rishonim. Another discussion that the Rishonim discuss is what would be in the case of Rava, where the person obligated himself to pay a mispar that's in fact a guzma, this exaggerated amount. So Rava said it's an asmachta, and we pass an asmachta lokanya. The question is, what about the bechlal masayim mana? So he said, if I don't work, I'm going to pay $1,000. And really, Baal HaSada is going to only have a loss of $500. Is he at least obligated to pay the $500? Meaning, had he obligated himself to pay the $500 Baal HaSada is going to lose, that he would have to pay. $1,000 that he doesn't, that's already a guzma. What about the $500 within the $1,000 that he obligated himself to pay? At least the amount that corresponds to a loss that the Baal HaSada is going to have, perhaps he should have to pay. Or maybe even that he's not going to have to pay. So the Rishonim say, it's a riff, it's a rush, and apparently this machloikis riff and rush goes to the core of understanding how asmachta lekanya works. I'm not going to go into it this morning, but it's definitely where the sugya is right here in terms of why is it at the end of the day that at the very least that $500, the person is going to have to pay. Just to speak out one piece of raid regarding asmachta, something worth mentioning, and that is that even though we paskin asmachta lekanya, there's a very, very big exception to that rule that plays itself out in halacha, and that is, or the makar to that is, halacha in hilchis staka, yeridei asim in reish nun ches if kot in yut, reish nun ches yut. Not alit staka, if somebody made a pledge for staka, the asmachta. But it wasn't an unconditional pledge, it was a conditional pledge. Kigoy, he said, in esa dova ployni, if I'm going to do that, eten kach fe kach lit staka. The asoy, and then he ends up doing it, chayef litein. The halacha is he's going to have to give. And we don't say that being that when he obligated himself to give the tzedakah, it was a conditional obligation. Thus, in his mind, when it comes to tzedakah, asmachta kanya. A similar halacha, also brought down in Shulchan Aruch, is a choshem mishpatzim in reish zayin, sevkot in yutes. Nodar, shvua, v'tkiyas kaf, mahani afilu b'smachta. So a neder, a shvua, and v'tkiyas kaf, those three things are achal, afilu b'smachta. And there's a discussion in the Poskim what the reason would be. One other interesting maramakim in Shulchan Aruch, and that is in Hilchas Tainis. So we're a day late as far as the halacha l'maisa, but in Erech Chaim Simen Tov Kuf Samech Beis, Sivkot in Yud Gimel, says the Mechaber, Yesh Misha Omer, Shemisha Nadar V'Omar. If somebody made a neder and he said, Emloi Eilech L'makim Ployni, if I don't go to a certain place, Eishet V'Tainis. Me'acha Shemashe Hisna, who divrei rishos have asmachta. The halacha is that being that it's divrei rishos, it's going to be asmachta. Aval imamar, if the person would say imloy esa mitzvah ployness, eishev betaynis, v'chein imamar, im yatzileni Hashem vitzara, o im yatzliach darki, loy havi asmachta. So again, you see this idea that when it's a dvar mitzvah, it could be you don't have the halacha of asmachta. Magen Avraham over here asks a kasha, however. At first glance, you would say, zeir geshmak. Magen Avraham's kasha is that the mechaber brings it as a yesh misha oimer. If it's only a yesh misha oimer, then it's mashma, maybe it's a das yochet. Either way, I am the poiskim, some interesting raid regarding asmachta in the context of a dvar mitzvah. Another gemara. Who gavered a couple hour l'shem shemi? There was a person that was a mekabel. And he was a farmer. The agreement that he had with the landlord was that he was going to grow shumshumi, sesame, in this field that he's working, zorachiti. And instead, he grew chitim, wheat. Now, there are two differences between shumshumi and chitim from the farmer's perspective. Number one, shumshumi is more valuable. Beginning of Perek Elamitzias. Number two, shumshumi weakens the ground more than chitin does. So this person went and he sowed chitin instead of shumshumi. But of the chitin is shumshumi, the chitin ended up going up in value. So when he gave the balasada what he was supposed to give him, his chelek, let's say he was an aris, so there's a division here, he ended up getting dollar-wise exactly what he thought he was supposed to get because the chitin went up in value. In fact, if that's the case, the balasada ended up gaining because shumshumi weakens the ground more than chitin does. And being that the farmer ended up growing chitin and not shumshumin, so the depreciation of the value of the land was less. So sovra of kahana lemeimer of kahana thought that the farmer can now go over to the balasada and he can tell him, listen, based on the original agreement, you thought you were going to get X amount of dollars of income, but you also realized that your value was going to depreciate a certain amount of money, so you had in your mind what you were going to get. It turns out that I gave you a better deal because you got the same amount of income, but being that I sold chitin instead of shumshumi, your land ended up depreciating less. So let me keep that difference. I don't have to give you more than I told you I was going to give you. It's not the way it works. Because if you ask a person, the person will tell you, he would rather that his land depreciate, but not lose out in terms of what he himself could eat. Meaning a person likes his property, but the person likes himself more than he likes his property, and as a result, I don't want to have to lose out in terms of how much income I'm going to get because of the fact that I benefited that my land didn't depreciate. The point that he was trying to make was is that if the arrangement was a 50-50 split and now more grew, you have to give him the 50-50. You can't offset it by something that he gained by the fact that his land didn't depreciate as much. A similar halacha. Who gathered a couple of shum shemiz? There was a person that took upon himself to sow shum shemiz or a chiti, and he didn't do the right thing. He did chitin, which, based on the derech hateva, the balas hadar should have lost out, because chitim is not as valuable as shum shemi. But what ended up happening was, of the chiti, tfeim in shum shemi. He ended up making so much chitin, and the chitim went up so much in value, that the balas hadar ended up profiting from the chitim itself. Let the farmer keep the difference. Meaning, he has a responsibility to give the balas hadar based on what he thought he was originally going to get. And even if he's an oris, so what they're doing here is they're splitting it. There's a 50-50 split. But being that he went and did his own thing, maybe the benefit that he gets from doing his own thing should belong to him only. And it meaning the 50-50 split was shum shemi, but he didn't do shum shemi, he did chiti. And by him being meshana and doing chiti, there was a benefit. Maybe he's the one that should keep the entire benefit, because it was his idea to do his own thing. He was the one that was meshana. Why should the balasada gain from this benefit that really had nothing to do with the balasada? Amalei Rav Achim Yidifti the Ravina. Is that true? It had nothing to do with the balasada. Ato hu ashpach aroloi ashpacha. Of course the balasada had something to do with the benefit, because at the end of the day, it was his ground, his land that produced this. As a result, he's certainly going to get a chelik in it. Amri nehardoi. So there's a little bit of confusion. Why in the world the Gemara brings this next half of Amud Gemara that we're about to learn? Pashit, it's because we just mentioned something in the name of Nehardoi, the Chachamim and Nehardoi, and this is something else that was mentioned in the names of the Hardoi. But either way, this Gemara that we're about to learn is the Makar to the Iska. Iska, wasn't that Perek Ezu Neshach? Yeah, but it's really, Makoira is here, Bava Metzia, Daf Kuftal, Amud Beis, Daf Kufay, Amud Alf. We spoke to that when we learned Perek Ezu Neshach, and this right here, Maimer Hamusker, put it sort of in brackets, is in half Amud Gemara. We have to reprogram ourselves to start thinking Iska a little bit. The Gemara here is going to introduce the concept of the Iska. So again, what is an Iska? Reuven and Shimon want to go into business together. Reuven has money, or Reuven has schayra, merchandise. Shimon is an operator. Shimon has a business idea. Reuven says, I'll provide the capital. Shimon, you go ahead. You be the operator. They agree on a shutfis. To keep it simple, they say, we're going to be 50-50 partners. So that's something that they have a right to do. They have to address any potential ribbis issue, as we'll mention in a moment. But that's something they have a right to do. So again, to be clear, Reuven is not lending Shimon money and trying to circumvent the laws of ribbis. That's not what's going on in our sugya. That's what goes on when you do a heter iska. What's going on over here is that they're engaging in a real life iska transaction. Reuven is giving Shimon money. Shimon is the operator. They want to go into business together. The lawyers sit down. We have to paper this transaction. How exactly are we going to do that? How are we going to take 100% of Reuven's money and ultimately only give Reuven 50% of the profits and 50% of the losses, where Shimon, who's not putting up any money, is going to get 50% of the profits, 50% of the losses? So the Chachamim, who were consulted by these lawyers, said, I have a very easy structure. What we're going to do is we're going to take this money, and 50% of the money is going to be deemed a milva, and the other 50% of the money is going to be deemed a pekadim. So essentially, even though Reuven is investing with Shimon, we're going to structure 50% of it as a halva. The other 50% is going to be pekadim. What's the difference? Milva lohitzonin. When Reuven lends Shimon money, the money that Reuven gives Shimon now belongs to Shimon. Shimon can be mekadesh and isha with it. He can invest it. If he invests it and he makes money, he keeps the profits. He invests and he loses money, he loses the money. He, in theory, could do whatever he wants with it. He just has one obligation. I owe you. I have to return the money back to the malva at the agreed upon date. The other 50% is going to be a pekadim. What's unique about a pekadim? Kol hecha de isa, b'shusa de mara isa. A shomer pekadim is not allowed to just go and use the pekadim that he was entrusted with. In fact, the pekadim always remains in the reshus of the mafkid. So what happens if the pekadim goes up in value? It's in the reshus of the mafkid. The mafkid is the one that benefits. What if it goes down in value? It's the mafkid that's going to be the one that's going to lose value. What is the responsibility of the shomer pekadim? Return it exactly as is. Not the value of what it was at the time that he got it, but return it when the agreed upon date is exactly the way it is. Whether it went up, when it went down, that's all on the cheshbon of the mafkid. That has nothing to do with the shomer pekadim. As a result, being that this money that was given, or this schayra that was given, was the impalgam of the palva pekadim, what's going to end up happening is if it goes up and it makes money, so half of the profit is going to go to the operator. Because half of it is a nova, that's his. He gets to keep any profits that come from it. He just has the responsibility to return dollar-wise exactly what he took. He's going to make that half. The other half is going to go to the mafkin, because half of it is a pekodin. And kol heichad isa b'shus in the mar isa, so anything that goes up belongs to me. The same is going to be true on the law side. So what you're going to end up happening is a situation where half of the profits are going to belong to the operator, because palga milva. Half of the profits are going to belong to the mafka, the investor, because palga pikadin. The same is true for the losses. That's how they were able to work this out. But there was one issue, and this is where this came up in Perek Ezu Neshech. The issue was, the Chachamim said that even though this may not be ribbis deraisa, but there's certainly a ribbis issue here. Why is there a ribbis issue? Because the only reason that the shomer, or the only reason the operator is willing to go and put koiches into this transaction, into this investment, is because of the fact that he's somehow benefiting from this. How's he benefiting from it? Because the investor gave him money, and he's allowing him to keep 50% of the profits. It's in exchange for 50% of the profits that he's willing to do the work for 100% of the money. The problem is, if 100% of the money is made up of 50% of milva and 50% of a kaddan, then essentially what you're doing is you're borrowing my money and willing to work for me because of the fact that I loaned you money. The operator makes money on the palga milva. So he's going to benefit from the palga milva, and he's willing to work on the palga pekodin. Why? Because he's going to benefit from the palga milva. So at the end of the day, from the investor's perspective, I loaned somebody money, and this person's going ahead and he's working really, really hard to make me a return on my money. Which money? The palga pekodin. But the only reason he's working for my palga pekodin is because I gave him a palga milva. Isn't that something that's ribbis? So because of that, the Gemara said you have to do one of two things. You have to either give the operator something additional in exchange for the work that he's doing. And the Gemara said a tremendous kula, which is brought down in Shulchan Aruch, and that is, give him even a dinar zahav. It was Shmuel's psak halacha. And Rav Moshe, when he discusses halacha l'maisa, how to do the heteriska, he says that the malva who's lending the leva money, he gives him $1,000, gives him $1,000,000 this loan, give him another dollar. Give him the dinar to make up for the work that this person is doing, because again, that's something that you have to take into consideration. Or the way it was done more traditionally is that they wouldn't split it 50-50, but rather they would split it in a way where the operator actually had a benefit. So that if the losses were split 50-50, then the profits would be split, let's say, two-thirds, one-third in the benefit of the operator. If the profits were split 50-50, then the losses would be split two-thirds, one-third, again, to the benefit of the operator. The operator would only have to realize one-third of the losses. The investor would realize two-thirds of the losses. The point is that the operator is taking a disproportionate amount of the profits. By taking a disproportionate amount of the profits, he's being compensated for the fact that he's also working on behalf of the investor. That's how you alleviate this iska issue. Says the Gemara, a few halachas regarding the iska. Ami nardoi, hay iska, palga milga palga pekodin, over rabbanu milsa nichle lula, even nichle lula valva. The rabbanu were very happy with this. They had no issue with this. It works for the loiva, it works for the malva. Everybody's happy. The investor's happy. The operator's happy. Says the Gemara, hashda mi palga milva, but if you're going to tell me that it's a palga milva, if the operator wants to take half the money and he wants to buy beer with it, it's technically something he could do. Because if it's a palga milva, milva leitzan it. No, Rava Amar Rava said no. L'achi karele iska. Think of the name iska. Why iska? Lasoik. Lasoik. He's working with it. The amaleki hivna lach lasuki bay. V'loy la mishna bay shichra. So even though it's technically palga milva, but it's a little different than an ordinary milva. An ordinary milva doesn't have strings attached. So you can do anything. You could just spend the money. Buy beer. It doesn't matter as long as you pay back your loan when the loan is due. But this loan is unique. It's even called a unique name. It's called Iska, so that the operator, even though he's technically borrowing half the money, does not have the same rights that a borrower usually has. He's going to be limited in terms of what he can do with this money based on the in terms of the agreement. What if the operator dies and now the investor wants his money back? So he can't get the money from the Yarshim. So if the Yarshim have karka that was left over by their father, so then you're a regular bali part of an achzi yisayimim, karka you'd be able to get. albeit b'shvua. But metaltalin, the yasmi, is loy mishtabli l'val chayv. So if all he has is metaltalin, he wouldn't be able to get it. And even if he has this iska, to the extent that the iska was metaltalin, whether it was money or whether it was chayra, if it's metaltalin, you have no way of getting it. Rav Amar, Rav said no. L'hachi kar le iska. The meis lo yasa metaltalin tzabonim. Again, even though it's a palga milva, it's not a regular milva. There's some strings attached over here. And whereas an ordinary milva, if the loyva dies, leaves over yasayim and metaltalin, you can't be going with the metaltalin. This metaltalin, the actual iska itself, you'd be able to get. And the svar Rashi says is very simple. Because why is it metaltalin the yasmi loy mishtabdi l'balchayv? It's because usually the malva in his mind never thinks that the metaltalin is going to be around. So he's almost miayish from it. He's not soymich on it, and as a result, he can't get it. But this metaltalin he does think is going to be around. Because this is Rava l'shitasi. Rava just said that the operator has certain responsibilities in terms of what he can and cannot do with this iska, although it's metaltalin, which means that based on the agreement, he's almost forced to keep it around. If he's forced to keep it around, why should the investor, who's wearing the hat of the malva, think that it's, of course I think it's going to be around. So this metaltalin is going to be meshubal b'chay. So two chidushim that Rava said as it relates to the palga milva. Number one, even though milva leitzah nitna, this milva has strings attached to it. Number two, even though usually a halva, where the loiva dies, and he only leaves over metaltalin, the malva can't be goiva. This metaltalin, the malva, will be able to be goiva. Amar Rava, another halacha regarding the iska. Chod the iska, vitrei shtari, pseida de malva. So you had an investor and an operator, and there was chod the iska. He gave him $10,000. And for the $10,000 that he gave him, he was going to go ahead and he was going to make one investment, chod iska. But they wrote it up in two shtaris. The way it was written was 5,000 or 5,000, just to keep the numbers even, because we're going to have to do some math here. It was 20,000, and they wrote it up as 10,000 and 10,000. And then the splits happened. One made money, one lost money, as we'll see in a moment. Say to the malva, the malva is going to be the one that's going to lose. Trey iski the chadashtara. But if it was two investments that were written up in one shtar, pseida the loiva, in that case, the pseida is going to be to the loiva. Meaning, depending on how it was documented as one shtar or two shtaris, that's ultimately going to determine how they're going to go ahead and they're going to divide everything up. So there's a long ratio in the bottom of the Amid that explains how this happens. Let's just work a little bit of arithmetic. So there were two investments that this partnership made. $10,000 and $10,000. The first one lost $5,000. The second one made $10,000. So one did really, really poorly. The other one did really, really badly. And the way the arrangement was, wow, the way the arrangement was made was, is that because of the ribbis issue, they had no choice but to split it disproportionately. So their way of splitting it disproportionately was, is that they're going to share in the losses equally, but the profits are going to go, let's say, two-thirds to the operator, one-third to the investor. Why two-thirds to the operator? He always has to get more, so that there shouldn't be a ribbis issue, because at the end of the day, he's a loiva. So he has to be getting more than what... So this, if you look at the two business transactions as one, so one lost 5,000, the other made 10,000, you're going to end up with a net of 5,000. You're going to split the 5,000. Two-thirds are going to go to the operator. One-third is going to go to the investor. So the investor is going to end up getting one-third of 5,000. If you look at it as two independent transactions, so you're going to take the 5,000 and you're going to cut it in half, because that was the arrangement. Chatzi-chatzi on the loss side. So each one is going to have a loss of 2,500. And then you're going to take the 10,000 and you're going to split it two-thirds, one-third, which means that $6,600 is going to go to the operator, $3,300 is going to go to the investor. Looking at it from the investor's perspective, he has a $2,500 loss and he has a $3,300 gain. What he's going to be left with is an $800 profit. So in the first case, if you looked at it as one transaction, you lump them all together, you let the profits of one offset the losses of the other, you come up with a net profit, you divide it two-thirds, one-third, the malva, the investor, is going to do better than if you look at it as two independent transactions. So the shaila is, how do you look at it? Do you look at it as one, or do you look at it as two? depends how it was written. If it's trei shtari, if it was two shtaris, say to them, oh, then the investor is going to end up losing. If it was chad shtari, even though it was trei iski, in that case, say to the loiva, it's the operator that's going to end up losing. We got it. So to Gemara, of Amar Rava, Haiman the couple iskum in chavre. Somebody took an iska from his friend, upasid, and it went bad. But he didn't want to go tell his investor that he lost money. So what did he do? Tarach umalya v'loy oide. He worked really, really hard on the next deal that he had to try to make it up. And he was able to make it up. At this point, Lay Matzi Amale, he can't go back and tell him, Dari mehech pseida bahadai, that I want that we should look at it as two independent transactions so that I will be the one that's going to end up profiting. Because as we saw earlier, trei shtari, if it's two transactions, the loiva is the one that ends up winning. Meaning, he's going to say, it was two deals. One deal lost, the other deal made. I'm going to divide the losses equally. I'm going to take two-thirds of the profits. So me, the operator, going to end up benefiting. You can't do that. Because the investor could always say, meaning, in your mind, you weren't viewing this as two transactions. You were viewing it as one transaction. Because when you worked so hard to make the second deal right, why were you doing it? Because you didn't want to show losses. You didn't want to come to me and tell me, listen, you know, I took your money and I lost. Because that would impact our relationship moving forward. That's not something that you were willing to do. So in your mind, as much as the second deal that you did was an independent deal, you ran it through a separate LLC, but in your mind, you were making the first transaction whole. So when it comes to splitting the profits and the losses, that's exactly the way we'd have to look at it. Meaning, it sounds from the Gemara like if this person would go and he would notify his investor, he would say, listen, I just invested the money. I'm sorry, it didn't work out. I have another deal. We'll do better on the next deal. Then, and a chanami, you would split the first one equally. The next one, you would split the profits equally if it in fact did better. And the loiva would end up benefiting. But being that he didn't do that, we look at the second one now as somehow related to the first one. He ends up, two people that go into business together, and it did well. And one told his friend, so this kipshut is not talking about a iska in the iska sense that we just discussed, but we're talking about a more traditional partnership where they both are working together, they're both providing the capital, a more basic type of transaction. The question is, do they have a right to unwind the transaction? Or do they not have the right to unwind the transaction? Unwind the partnership? Or do they not have a right to unwind the partnership? So that's what Rava was addressing. So if one partner tells the other partner, I want out, so could you just unwind it? If one person says that, no, I want to continue our partnership, he has a right to do that. What if the one partner tells the other that, listen, we have profits, we're sitting on $10,000 profits, 50% of his mind, I want my half. Amalei Ketob, no, Rav Chalakarni Mishtabit. He has a koyach ataina to say, I don't want to do that. And how would he have a right to do that? Under what basis? In order to have a koyach ataina, there has to be a rationale behind it. There is a rationale. Because he could always say, what happens if the next deal that we do loses money? We're going to have to make up those losses. Where are we going to make up those losses? From the money that's sitting in the account right now. If I give you half of your profits, I'm not going to have that money to offset potential losses that we're going to have in the future. So it's not like this profit has no bearings on our business dealings moving forward. Of course it does. Because we may need this money. We may need it to offset losses. You have a surplus in one month. What if you have a deficit in the next month? So there's a very rational koyach ataina that the partner can have. As a result, you can tell him, I'm not giving it to you. Even though it's profit. This is business 101. And if he tells him, havli palga ravcha upalga karna. Let's say he says, you're right, I want out completely. Give me half my amali. You told him, iskala dadi meshubit. I need your half. We're partners. You can't just walk out of a partnership. I invested a lot into this. And it's for that reason that I need your whole half. And if he tells him, nifle ravcha, this last Gemara is interesting. What if he tells him, you know what? I'll take half, and if in the future you have an issue where you can't make payroll and you are relying on my money, I guarantee it, I'll give it to you. Can't do that either. And here the Gemara gives already a little bit of a heebie-jeebie reason. Amalehi, he told him, why? Mazel de betray otif. If you're my partner moving forward, we have two people invested in this transaction, so the man mazel. And the mazel of two is sometimes better than the mazel of one. And I want to have a good mazel in my business dealings. And it's for that reason, even though technically from a dollars and cents standpoint, what's the point? I just structured it in a way where my partner's not going to lose anything. It doesn't matter. We assume that this is something that he is in fact not allowed to do. So two things. First of all, again, the Gemara put us down this road here of the Isco, which is a complicated transaction. I just want to chazer over one point that we emphasized very strongly when we learned Perkei Zuneshech, specifically on a Sunday morning, on a hashtag Sunday style daf, which this morning isn't, but a hashtag Sunday style daf when we discuss the Heter Isco. And that is, the Isco that's discussed in the Gemara was a real transaction where two people were going into business together. We borrowed the term Isco, and we created the Heter Isco. And the Yesod of the Heter Isco is when two people are engaging it alone. Reuven wants to lend Shimon money. He also wants to charge him 12% interest. He also doesn't want to be over the Issa Ribbis. So how do you do that? That's the Heter Isco. You want to have your cake and eat it too. There's a way to have your cake and eat it too. That is the Heter Isco. What they did what people do is they structure the loan as an Isco. And they write a document that says that even though technically Reuven's lending Shimon money, really he's not lending Shimon money. He's investing with Shimon. It's palgamilva, it's palgapakadim. As a result, you're able to get your ribbis. What about the fact that the operator is working for you? You give him a dollar. As long as you give him $1, that somehow alleviates the ribbis issue. But when we spoke at the time, we went through a chuv from Ramesha where he speaks it out so beautifully. From the Malva's perspective, if this is a real investment, is this something he would do? If you're in the lending business, you're not interested in taking risks. You're not interested in learning the business of the person that you're lending money to. You want to know that your money is secure and that you're going to get whatever return you agreed on getting. You're not interested in taking any risk. If the yesod of Heter Iska is that we make the milva into a iska, with iska there's risk. You share the profits, you share the losses. How do you get around that? So what was the answer? The answer is they do is as follows. They write in the document that the lender says that I don't trust this borrower. I'm lending him $1 million, but I don't trust him. Meaning, I trust him to a degree. He's telling me that he's going to engage in this business. We structure it as a business investment. And he's positive that he's going to make so much money that my percentage of it is going to result in me making 12% of my investment. I'm willing to take it upon myself. I'm willing to take that risk. But I don't trust you to tell me whether you did make money or you didn't make money. The only way I'll trust you is if you go to a Beis Din Shel Mumchin and you take a Sefer Torah, Nikitas Chefetz, and you swear a Shvua Deiraisa that it didn't make 12%. Otherwise, I don't believe you that you didn't make 12%. If you're willing to say that unless you do that, you're going to give me the 12%, I'll be willing to do it. Basically, what they do is they make it impossible for him to tell you that he didn't earn 12%. If he can't tell you that he didn't earn 12%, he has to give you the 12%. That's how you end up absolutely positively getting your money. So the yusoid of the Heter Iska is that we're structuring the loan as an iska. The problem is if it's an iska, it's dead on arrival. That means I'm taking risk. I don't want to take risk. The teretz is you do it in a way where he's almost forced to give you profits because he has no way of proving to you that there were no profits. Where does it play itself out? In halacha, where does it become troubling? We spoke at a tshuva for a Moshe. We spoke at a tshuva for a David Feinstein Shlita. Where does it become a little troubling? What if I know? What if the investor is keen on what exactly his operator is doing and he knows whether he's making money or losing money? What if he knows for sure he was using it for personal reasons, that he for sure wasn't going to be making money at all? So that's where it becomes a little tricky. The other issue is that you just sat down with a bank, potentially, and you have 800 pages worth of loan documents that say that you're borrowing money, you're borrowing money, you're borrowing money, and there's a one-page document that your Rav emailed you, Bein Hasdarim, that says that really it's a Heter Iska, and that somehow supersedes everything that you did. I mean, it seems a little bizarre. So how does that work? So Rav Moshe says, yeah, you have language in the Iska that says that this document supersedes everything else that you did. What's the point in the 800 pages? That's security. In the event that you somehow can't collect in the real way, which is the Iska way, you can end up doing it this way. The bottom line is, although it seems like you're really circumventing a Dover Chomer Ad L'Moed, that the Iska is something that's been done throughout the Dairis. So again, ask your local rabbi from a Hashkafic standpoint, but it's something that's extremely Mikubal. But the bottom line is that this Sugya is the predecessor of the Heter Iska. This is the real Iska. The Heter Iska is when you're not doing an Iska, you're just structuring it as an Iska so that you'd be able to avoid ribbis issues. The other thing just worth mentioning, light, and then we'll learn a light Daf Gemara, and that is that there's a new Kaich HaTayin over here. Reuven can tell Shimon, we agreed to be partners, you can't just leave your partnership now. Because Mazel de Beitrei Yodif. And I feel that if we're going to do this together as partners, don't just guarantee me my half. No, I want you to be a shuttif. I want you to really have something invested in this, because if you do, we're going to have a bigger mazel. So there's a few gemaras that came to mind. Number one, there's Gemara Masechtas Pesachim. The gemara says that a person should try to find a bar mazel and become a shuttif. Because there's a concept of mazel. So if you find a person that you know, he's of everything this person touches turns into gold, wouldn't be such a bad idea to invest with him. Or maybe even become his partner. It's something that makes sense. This is more generic. Mazla de Beitrei Adif. But another gemara that comes to mind is Ksubis Daf Kuf Gimel Amid Aleph. The gemara over there is discussing a halacha of Amona Nizoynis Minechse Yisoyma. And the gemara says a halacha that the only time the Yisoyma obligated to support the Amona is if she's living with the Yisoyma. But let's say she says, I'm going to move out, and you'll just drop ship whatever you owe me. You know, that doesn't work. She has to be there, says the Gemara. Why? Because they ketaina, you're right, I have to give you mazainas. So if you're living with us, there'll be more bracha. So from the more bracha that there's going to be, I can support you. But if you're going to move out, there's less bracha, then already I'm not obligated. Says Rashi, why birchas habayis meruba? So Rashi says two pshat. The first pshat Rashi says is very pashat. Bnei Adam Shoizim says that mishtakrim. Why doesn't mean mazel in the heebie-jeebie sense? We mean very simply, the more people that are there, the more things get done. Exactly, you have the network. Alternatively, says Rashi, mazel derabim adif. There's a concept of a mazel derabim. The more people that are there, the more mazel you have, so that there's mazel derabim. So one interesting maramokim to speak out, and that is we're familiar with psukim in the Torah. The Torah says when the Yidden used to go fight a war, so the Meshuach Muhammad would get up, and there were certain people that were exempt. You can get an exemption. How so? Mio yish asher erasisha, bono bayis, not akerem. If you're within Shanari China, there's different stages. Yelech v'yoshev lebeisa. You have a right to go back. Why? Because we're afraid that you're going to die in war. And Shanari China to die in war, that's horrible. Freik tevil negayin. I don't understand. And if you go home, you're not going to die? Memanavshach. If you're supposed to die, then you'll die in your house. And if you're not supposed to die, you're not going to die at the battle front either. So, freak the Vilna Gaon. I don't understand these psukei Torah. It's the Vilna Gaon's kasha. And the Gro, in a few places in his Pirush on Tanakh, says the same Torah. He says that a person has a mazel. But just like an individual has a mazel, a rabbin has a mazel either. There's a mazel proti, and there's a mazel kloli. What we're concerned is that maybe this person's mazel proti is to live. But the mazel kloli of the people that are fighting is to die. And what we're worried about is that maybe the mazel kloli will be misgaber over his mazel proti. That's how he's going to die. So you know what we tell him? Yelech v'yoshev lebeisoy. Don't risk getting involved in this mazel kloli. Because maybe your mazel proti is to live. So if you stay at home, everything is going to be fine. But if you go out, you're shipped out to Afghanistan. You may be over there. You're going to die. So we leave you over here. We tell you not to go out. Because there's a mazel proti and a mazel kloli. Very important Vilna Gaon. But there's a marsha that I believe maybe contradicts this a little bit. There's a machloikas in the Masechta Shabbos. Yesh mazel Yisrael or ein mazel Yisrael. Freik Tosfos. How could the amandama that holds a mazel Yisrael? Bani chayu mazoi nila b'shtalyim milsa el b'mazel talyim milsa. The Gemara says everything is talyim mazel, or at least the big three. Bani chayu mazoi ni says the Gemara. The amandama that holds a mazel Yisrael doesn't hold that it doesn't have mazel. Of course he has mazel. Everyone has mazel. There's a mazel. There's some predetermined fate that decides a lot of your life. So what does a mazel Yisrael mean? It means you can change your mazel. A guy can't change his mazel. He's born with a mazel. He dies with the same mazel. Ein mazel Yisrael, you're not necessarily stuck with your mazel. There are things you can do to affect your mazel. But of course, you wake up in the morning with mazel. Zok to Marsha, let's do back in the envelope arithmetic. If ein mazel Yisrael means you can change your mazel, what does the yesh mazel Yisrael mean? You can't change your mazel. It means your mazel is your mazel is your mazel. Fake to Marsha, how do you understand Parshas Bechul Kaysai? How do you understand Parshas Kisavai? How do you understand the second Parshas of Kriyishma? There's so many Yehudei HaTorah which say very, very clearly, if you do the right thing, bracha. If you do the wrong thing, klala. I thought it's all mazel. So bishleim, if you hold a mazel Yisrael, you can change your mazel. So that's where it's negeya, all the Yehudei HaTorah. But if you hold yesh mazel Yisrael, which means, according to Tosfos and Shabbos Kuf Nun Vav Amud Aleph, that you can't even change your mazel. So what's the negeya? The Yehudei HaTorah says in Mashal, I'm going to tell you an important yisoid in the sugya of mazel Yisrael. He says a very gishmak to Mashal. He says the machloikas yesh mazel Yisrael, a mazel Yisrael is negeya the yachid. Each yachid has a mazel. How he's going to live is dependent on his mazel. The man of Yesh Mazel Yisrael holds, you can't even change it. The mazon alma that holds a mazon yisrael holds. Oh, yidei schus gadol. It's possible for you to change your mazon. But when it comes to the rabbim, of course there's no mazon. That's the whole Torah. If the rabbim does the right thing, there's going to be shefa bracha v'atzlocha. If the rabbim does the wrong thing, then it could be tzaris al kapanim. Whereas the goyim was mechadish. This mazon klali chaba marshon chedushi agad shabbos kufnun vavam and aleph that says that the whole sugi of mazon is only when you're danning the yachid. But whenever you're danning the rabbim, there's no sugi of mazon either. V'yesh liyashiv. But for now, let's see the Gemara. Another Mishnah regarding a farmer. Hamakabul sada mechaveroi v'le rotzel v'nachesh. And he didn't want to weed the field. So again, we're not farmers, so we're not exactly, at least I'll speak for myself, I'm not exactly sure how this works, but apparently somewhere in the Zareya process, they would go, and they would start weeding out the field. So to the extent that the Minig HaMakom was to do Nichosh, we saw the first Mishnah in the Perek, Hakol Kaminig HaMedino. But let's say this farmer says, you know, I don't want to be Menachesh, he told him, Ma'ich Baslach, why not? Hayol V'ani Noisein L'cha Es Chakircha. Meaning, we're talking about a Chaker, not an artist. A Chaker is someone that gives a fixed rent amount. So he tells the landlord, I know the Minig HaMakom is to do Nichosh, but really, if I don't do Nichosh, is it going to affect you? It's not going to affect you. Meaning, Bishloima, if you're my Shutif, so it affects you. But if I'm giving you a fixed rent amount anyway, so what do you care so much whether I do it or I don't do it? So the halacha is ain't shayman loy. We don't listen to him. What if you terminate your lease, you leave, now we have weeds that are growing, and next year it's going to be my headache. It's for that reason, it's not a good time. Says the Gemara, what if the farmer tells the landlord, I don't want to weed it while I'm being zayreya. That's tedious. But after I finish, while I'm being kaitzer, after I'm finished doing my work, then I'll go ahead, I'll plow it, I'll weed it, and I'll take care of it. Amalei, you can tell them, chitim al yosabino. No, it's the chitim that grow are going to be better if I weed it right now, and I want to have chitim al yosabino. If he tells us, avnina l'cha chitim yishuka, he says, what are you worried about? You want to have good chitim? If I don't grow good chitin, I'll buy good chitin from the street. No, I want chitin from my own property. If he tells him, you know what? I'll weed your chelik. Meaning I owe you 100 bushels a year. So that 100 bushels, that area, I'll weed. I just don't want to weed my chelik. Will you allow me to violate the Minig HaMakom? Amalei, Kamantz V'Shem Ro La'Roi. No, I don't want my land to have a bad reputation. You're going to take, you're going to sell it. People say, where did it come from? Okay, from Chamyankel's field, as I say to sell. It's going to affect my business moving forward. In the Minig HaMakom is to do Nichosh, you have to do Nichosh. Right, the Gemara, these are all nice tainas that the landlord could have, and that's not what the Mishnah said. But Tanan, didn't the Mishnah say that Neshem HaLos L'Fanei HaSavim, that the reason that the landlord can tell, the real Kaya Chataina in this Mishnah is Mipnesh Sheyocha Loimalei Lamachar Ate Yoitzei Mimeno Malus Lefanei Asavim. Because even though right now maybe it doesn't affect me, but I'm worried about tomorrow. So the Gemara says, you're right. Elo Bicham Damalei Bizrid Anafel Nafel. That's what you have to say. You have to say that the real reason that the farmer can't say, I'm not going to do Nichosh and don't worry about it, is because we could say that weeding it later may not get everything, because in the interim, seeds may fall, things may grow, it's going to be hard to weed that, and it's for that reason that you can't say that, why does it affect you? It does affect you, because I could always terminate my lease, so that even though right now it's not affecting you, but next year it's going to affect you. The fact that you're going to weed it later may not get everything, because bizr the nuffle, once a seed falls and something starts growing, it's very hard to chop it, so you just follow the Minig HaMakom, don't come with a clever way to circumvent it, and like this, that's what you'll be obligated to do. Another Mishnah. Somebody is an Aris. He was Mekabos Adem Chavei. It's a gate Mishnah. It's not working. But because he's an Aris, he can't just leave. Because his arrangement with the landlord is, they're splitting the profits. If it can grow enough where you'd be able to pile up a hump of tefuah, you have to work the field. But if you can't even make that hump, then you can say, listen, it's a waste of my time. I'm going to spend a whole year now working on a field that's not going to produce anything. You have a right to leave. So again, this guy was a farmer. He took this field. He thought he was going to make money. He had his projections. And then he realizes that he's not going to make anything over here. So what does he do? So could he back out or could he not back out? It depends how little it could produce. If it can't even make one pile of tefuah, which again, to me sounds small. If he can't even make that, then you can leave. But if you could make that, Chayv Amar Rabbi Yehuda, my kids for Bikri, it makes no sense. So if I take a field that's 100 acres and it can make one pile, that's the share. And if I take a field that's 1 acre and it can make one pile, that's the share. It doesn't make so much sense. Elim, Yesh Bakidei Nefilah. If it makes enough seed that I'll be able to sow for next year, then I have to work it this year. If not, I don't have to work. So machleik is tanam, what this year is. Tanam rabban, mekabel tzad b'chavei liyasa. Somebody took upon a field, and segeit nish, im yesh b'chadei l'hamed kri, if there's enough for it to be able to pile up a ham, chay l'tapaba, then you're obligated to do it. Shekach koysev loy. Because if you read the language in the Shtar HaRisus, that's what the Oris says. Ano oikim, v'aner, v'ezra, v'echzoid, v'amer, v'edoish, v'idri, v'oikim, kario, kadamach. So these are different jobs that were done in the field. V'teisi an, you're going to come v'tite upalgo, you're going to come and take half. Ano ba'moli, u'benafkus yodi palgo, and I'm going to take half. But what's the key word that we need from this Aramaic that we just read? That is, it's hard to read legal documents when they're in English, so we're not even going to try to read it in Aramaic. He told them, Va'oikim karyo kadamach. He said, I'm going to make a kri. Oh, so you see, that's the magic share. If I can satisfy that basic obligation that I have, which is that if there's a kri, we're going to split it 50-50, then you move forward. But if I couldn't make the kri, so the kai gavno, the obligation, doesn't even go to it. The kamik de lahamba kri. Okay, now let's dumb it down a little more. What exactly is that share? It's big enough that you can take the shovel and you can stick it as a stake inside the kri. That would be the shear. What if you could stick a shovel in, but the sides of the shovel, the scoop part of it, are sticking out from the side? It's protruding. Is that okay or is that not okay? Does that mean the heap is too small or not? Toshma, if there's one part of the spoon that sees the chama, then it's already knock. I mean, it has to be completely covered. Itmar, Levi Yomar, Sholish Sa. Levi gave a number to it. It's 3 Sa. V'Rabiyana Yamri Sosayim. Rabiyana said it's 2 Sa. Amri Shlokish, Sosayim, Sha Amru Chutzman Ayitza. When we say Sosayim, means net Sosayim. So if the artist is going to get net, meaning after he expenses whatever he needs to expense, if he walks away with a net of Sasayan, that's going to be the shit. Tanan Hossa. Now, we just mentioned the Vei Rabbiyanai, so the Gemara is going to do what it often does really well. We're going to digress now and bring a whole bunch of random halachas, again, random to our sugya, that was said in the name of the Vei Rabbiyanai. Tanan Hossa. And the first is a Mishnah in Mesechtes Uktin, Pritzei Zeisen Vanovim. If somebody has Pritzei Zeisen Vanovim, so we know what a paritz and a prutz is. Zaysim that are prutzim. Beishamai metamin, ubeisil metarin. Beishamai says that it's food, thus it's makabel tumah. Beisil says it's not food, it's not makabel tumah. My prutze zaysim. What does that mean? Amar Rav Huna, rishe zaysim. Bad olives, meaning they're unripened or they will never ripen. Amar Rav Yosi, my karu, where do you find that the word prutzus has to do with rishus? One pasuk, b'nei pritzei yamcha yinasu lahamid chazam v'nechsholu, Reb Nachum ha-Yizchom ha-Meyhocha v'hoilid bein parit shoyfichdom. V'kama pritzei zesen, how many, or how ripe can they be and still be called pritzei zesen? I mean, what's the sheer of wickedness, ripeness, in terms of where they would be considered pritzei zesen, that this machloik is v'shamim v'sil, whether the mekabel tumah or not mekabel would apply. Rabbi Elazar says, arba kabin l'kaira. If when you take the zesen and you put him under the kaira, the olive press, and all it can produce is 4 calves, that's going to be considered pritzei zesen. But if it can produce more than 4 calves, that is not. So meaning the significance of whether it's ripe or not ripe is based on how much oil it's going to produce. So if all it can produce is arba kabin, then it's considered pritzei zesen. That's where, according to Beis Hillel, it's not makabel tumah, it's not even considered an oichel. Whereas if it could produce more, then it's an oichel. The Rabbi Yana Yamid, they had a much larger share. So sayim l'koira, 2 sa to the koira. V'loi pligi, the Gemara says, haba asi demai l'koira ba'ulula, haba asi demai l'tasa kurim ba'ulula. They lived in different cities. There were places where they would put more olives, the place will pull less olives. So if you put less olives, then the shear is dalet kabin l'koira. If they put more olives, then it has to be a larger shear. They put so many olives, it's for sure going to produce dalet kabin. So even if it produces up to sasayim, we say it's pritzei zesen, and it's not mekabel tumah. If it produces more than sasayim, then it's mekabel tumah. So it's just pro rata. It's the same concept, but depending on how much you put in, that would determine what the output has to be in order for them to be considered zeisan and makabel tumah. Tanu rabbanan, another halacha that's going to mention the Vei Rabbiyanai. Alu bi'ilon shekoy chayra u besoycha shekoy chayra. So the Mishnah over there is a Mishnah Masechta Zavin, and it's discussing a Zav. A Zav has a very unique type of Tumah. It's Matama Tumas Mishka V'Moshav. One thing that a Zav is Matama is if a Zav leans on something, or if something leans on a Zav, Mishka V'Moshav, the halach is that the Zav is Matama. It's based on that, the Mishnah says an interesting halacha. If a Zav and someone that's not a Zav were both sitting on a tree, or they were sitting on the branch of a tree, naturally, one person, whoever weighs more, is going to tilt the tree a little bit. We look at it from a halacha standpoint as if the two people are leaning on each other, and as a result, depending, regardless of who's sitting on the bottom, who's sitting on the top, if one person's a zav, the zav is going to be matama, the other person that's not a zav. Says the Mishnah, but that's only if the ilon was koichera, or the branch was koichera. It was weak. So, olu b'ilon shekoichera, u'besoicha shekoichera, tam hechi, tam ilon shekoichera, omer de b'raviane, kol she'im be'ikroi lachuk roiva. If the trunk of the tree is so small that you can't carve out a quarter of a kav of wood, that's considered a tree that's koichera. Hechi dami soicha shekoichera. What's an example of a branch that's koichera? Omer ish lakish, kol she'nichbeis be'chezioina. It's so thin that you can hide it in your fist. So that the tree that's koichera, if somehow two people are sitting on that, it's going to tilt it, it's probably going to fall, but regardless, that's what this halacha is going to be negate. Tanan hasam, another halacha. Halacha be'ez ha'pras. If somebody's walking in a be'ez ha'pras, agabi avonim, she'yachal ha'asit, and he was walking on top of avonim, stones that are movable, meaning they weren't attached to the ground, ala adam, or if he was riding on top of a person, v'ala behema, or he was riding on an animal, she'koychan ra, that are weak, and they're touching something that could be moved. Tamid halacha is going to be tamid. So be'ez ha'pras is a cemetery where we know for sure, or it's a field, where we know for sure somebody was once buried. They plowed the field. Being that they plowed the field, you don't have to be worried anymore about Tumah Deiraisa. But you do have to be worried about Tumah Derabanan, because the Etzem Kisayir is already Metama. So if you touch something as you're walking, you have to be concerned. Maybe you touched a stone, you're going to be Tumah. So if somebody's walking and he kicks something in a Beis HaPras, he's Tumah Derabanan. Or if you're walking on top of someone or something, you're riding on someone or something, that's Koichayra. Being that it's koichei ra, that person or that animal is going machmas you. So if it kicks something, it's as if you kicked something, you're now going to become tummy for kicking it. What's called tumas hesed. The tumah is going to relate itself to you. What does it have to do with us? Hey chidami adam shekoichei ra. Amar eish lakish kol she reichvei v'arkuvois of noikshais. Someone that when he walks, his knees knock together. That's a person shekoichera. Somebody rides on this animal, it immediately defecates, just goes to the bathroom. So that would be considered an animal shekoichera. So again, you had Omri de Rabbi Yanai, that's why it was brought here. One last gemara. Omri de Rabbi Yanai, the tefillah of the tefillin dalet kap. When it comes to a certain halach and hilchas tefillah, and a certain halach and hilchas tefillin, dalet kap. The tefillah mahi, tiny ruling to the brayis, and noisim, masay al ksefai. If somebody was carrying something on his shoulder, he has man tefillah, it's time to daven. Pachas with dalet kap. If what he's carrying weighs less than 4 kabin, mafshil machayrav, you could hold it, swing it to your back, and daven. You can daven while you're holding it. Arba kabin, if it weighs dalet kabin, maniach agabi karkum espan. Then you have to put it down on the ground, and daven. With tefillin mahi, where's it negeya, the sheer dalet kabin related to tefillin? So tefillin, it's very straightforward. If you're holding something, could you daven or not? It depends. If it weighs dalet kabin, you can't. If it doesn't weigh dalet kabin, you can't. What about regarding tefillin? If somebody was carrying something on his head, he's also wearing tefillin on his head. So the olden days, he used to wear tefillin the whole day. So not so uncommon. You have tefillin and you have something else. If the tefillin were being crushed by the thing that you have on your head, aser. If they're not being crushed, mutter. Be'ez ha'masoy amru. When is this true? Meaning, how do you know if it's being crushed or not being crushed? The masoy shel dalet kabin. So if it's 4 kabin, that's when it's an issue. Tani Reb Chiya, hamoitzi zevel ha'roishoy. What if somebody has zevel on his head? Utfilin b'roishoy. And he has tefillin on his head. So then you should certainly take your tefillin off. But where do you put your tefillin? Hareza lo yisalkim l'tstadim. Don't put the tefillin on the side of your head. You don't want it on your head together with the zevel. You also shouldn't tie the tefillin around your waist. That's a bizarre. What you should do is, this is interesting, put it right next to your tefillin shalyat. Tie it on your hand, next to your tefillin shalyat. That's what you should do if you have zevel on your head while you're wearing tefillin. But the Beishela argued. Meaning, Beishela had a whole different shita. We said that what's the shir? The shir is dalet kabin. Tefillah dalet kabin, tefillin dalet kabin. Tefillah dalet kabin, if you're holding dalet Kabin, you have to put it down to daven. Tefillin dal kabin is if you have dal kabin on your head, you can't have your tefillin shol rush. Even if you have the covering where they put the tefillin box, even that can't be on your head together with your tefillin. You can't have anything on your head together with your tefillin. Meaning, how much? I'm going to buy a river the pumpadisa. Even if it's a quarter of pumpadisa, the point is, even if it's a negligible amount, doesn't matter how small it is, you can't have anything on your head according to Meshach. It's not dalakabim, but regardless of what it is, you can't have it on your head together with the tefillin.